But Brian O'Dwyer, first of all, you're very welcome to the program, Brian. How are you?
Thank you, Adrian. We're all doing well under the circumstances.
Under the circumstances, yeah. You're actually holed up in way up in North Salem, buried in the woods there with your good wife, Mariana. And just to give us an idea of what many people, it's a very topical subject, in that when the pandemic was raging in New York City in particular, many fled, however temporarily, to outside of New York. Outside of New York City anyway, and there are, you know, the reality of the matter is that many who have an option are actually not staying or living in New York City for the time being, at least anyway, despite the fact that New York, in New York State, we seem to be doing better than many of the other states right across the country.
Well, there's no question about it. I think, you know, we shut down, you know, Governor Cuomo, you know, made us shut down and shut down fast. And it's, you know, it's not only him, but Governor Murphy, Governor Lamont, the people in the Northeast, I think, did a really fabulous job of doing this, just as the people in Ireland did, and I think that's the telling difference. And unfortunately, there are others that didn't, and we see the result in Florida and Arizona and Texas.
And California, of course.
California.
Making records, too, with the greatest number. All right, so that begs the question. For those who feel New Yorkers fled and they won't be back, what's your reaction to that?
I think there will be some. I think temporarily there will be some. I think there will be some fundamental change. I think, I was saying the other day, I think the days of the five-day work week are gone. Most people have that can do that, and of course that means just white-collar professional people, not the people who work in the restaurants and the people who work in the supermarkets and the people who, you know, who's blue-collar people who work kicking up our garbage and stuff like that. They're not going to be affected by this. But the people who can and who basically work with computers and stuff have found it easier, have found that their productivity is not particularly unenhanced. So I think they will still want to come in, and I suspect they'll eventually still want to live in the city, but I think it'll take a long time. But they will not be working 5 days a week. They'll be working 4 days a week or 3 days a week and 2 days from home.
There's another fear, if not reality, that because of now everything between Zoom and social media and the digital advances, that could actually lead to a lot of further layoffs, even in the, again, in the white-collar professions and industries, because the reality also is that a great number of companies will no longer need the space, can save a ton of money as this goes forward. And would it be fair enough to say that the unknown will remain unknown, at least for the time being?
I think we're going to see a very different New York for the next 3 or 4 years, and we're actually a very different country for the next 3 or 4 years. Where that takes us, I don't think anybody knows, which is really the uncertainty of all of this.
Brian, to say that Congressman John Lewis was a stalwart for the left 60 years. And by the way, Congressman John Lewis passed away this week. And among those who paid tribute to John Lewis and the memory of John Lewis was an ad hoc group of Irish and American civil rights leaders, you know, who came to the fore and signed off on a letter, some 60 plus leaders again, and paid particular tribute to John Lewis and his staunch support of the civil rights movement in Northern Ireland through the 60s and indeed right through the Troubles and up to the time of his death.
He was an extraordinary man, and those of us who over the years worked with the civil rights movement you know, really looked up to him and what he did in terms of totally aggressively pursuing his agenda. And at the same time, he was, you know, it was during the civil rights era, the beginning of the civil rights era, the incredible alliances were made between the black community, the Irish community, which led to the adoption, one of the Sullivan principles, which was that kept boycotted South Africa during the course of the time, and led in large part to the ending of apartheid, and then morphed into the McBride principles, which again kept economic pressure on Britain and the North, and led again to a cessation of the Troubles in the North. I think all of those are stories probably not told a whole lot or not enough. And I think one of the things that the committee tried to do, Kevin Sullivan, we really held this up, Joe Crowley, John Norton, people of that, Neil O'Dowd, people like that, and myself, we tried to, one, fashion a statement, and two, to push back on this awful thing that's going up, this Irish Lives Matter of T-shirt that's being pushed by Amazon and Walmart, mm-hmm. which is particularly offensive and in any number of ways.
So just in case, excuse me, Brian, but just in case there, you know, was any doubt as to the motivation, you know, for again the, you know, Green Lives Matter, they outdid themselves this year, of course, right around the St. Patrick's Day and season, and they thought it would be even funnier to come out with a T-shirt that says Irish Livers Matter, you know?
Yeah, exactly, Adrian, and I think that's sometimes lost on this, was to some people who think that somehow it's in favor of the Irish. It's making fun of the Irish and who we are, and you're absolutely right. This was not some sort of statement that was in favor of who we are. On the contrary, it's a mocking statement.
We have, as a community, particularly around St. Patrick's Day, and of course you were the Grand Marshal of last year's New York City St. Patrick's Day parade, but we find, you know, that there's still some stage Irish, you know, leprechaun paddy whackery that does show up around St. Patrick's Day, and there are those who think that, you know, we are a jolly group indeed, and we can take a joke and we can make a joke, and are we making too much fuss over this? Is that an easy out, you know, for, say, the Amazons and the Walmarts?
No, it isn't an easy out. It's a mockery. It's a mockery of us as a people. And sure, we may make a joke among ourselves, but that's very different than and I can tell you no other ethnic group should or would put up with it.
Brian, tell us about your own early experience. Well, first of all, your father, Paul O'Dwyer, a civil rights leader and activist, dragged you along as a young, a young kid, to the civil rights marches back in the 60s. And indeed, tribute indeed to your mother, Kathleen O'Dwyer, who I am sure had plenty of anxiety, but knew the significance of joining in, you know, if you want to talk to Black Lives Matter, that was way, way not a popular undertaking for the Irish community anyway. Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, there was always, as you well know, Adrian, in our household, an idea that as Irish we had, and being of a people that had been always discriminated against and oppressed, that we had a particular responsibility to take that on as a people. And as a high schooler, I was picketing Woolworths because they weren't allowing black young students or anybody to sit at their lunch counters in the South. I marched with Dad in Mississippi, and that was always, in those days, you never knew whether you were going to get through it or whether you were going to get beaten or worse. There were people being killed in those days. So, you know, it took particular acts of courage and commitment that he had, and I think, you know, gave to me. And we wanted to, and those of us, John Connorton, who was at the march and Martin Luther King as a young child, John's my age. But the point being that those of us that were there and those of us over the course of the years, like Joe Crowley, who had been a wonderful supporter of black people, the black movement, we wanted that to be shown out, and we wanted the Irish community to talk loud and clear about their support of movement and particularly of John Lewis. And I must say the response, we never thought that we would get the response we got. It's absolutely overwhelming. People from all walks of Irish life, political, economic, social, cultural, all of them, you know, without hesitation, signed on.
Yeah, and I would like to acknowledge one of the drafters, if there's such a word and there isn't, but never mind, of this letter, Ted Smith, who is president of Clutchman Ireland House. But I want to hit on a part of that letter, one that acknowledges, and we haven't seen this before, that perhaps the Irish, Irish Americans and those of Irish heritage, you know, should get on board. And God knows we know a lot of people, Irish and Irish Americans, who wouldn't touch the Black Lives Matter movement with a 40-foot pole. The acknowledgement that perhaps we ought to know better following 800 years of oppression ourselves is something that indeed many will feel offended by and say, why don't you mind your own business, and could you address that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a particular responsibility. I mean, we are, as a people, we were the ones, you know, that suffered the lash of oppression in Ireland, the genocide of the Great Hunger, you name it, way down to the black and tans coming into our area, into the streets and homes of New York, of Ireland.
And slaughtering all before them.
Yeah. And then when we got here as a people, what happens? We're told that no Irish need apply. So, you know, and we've overcome that, and we've been able to make our way very, very well in this society. But let's not forget where we came from, and let's not forget that discrimination still exists, if not so much against us, but against others. And it's our, as those who have suffered that, that we need to... that we have a particular responsibility to act and speak out. And by the way, Adrian, thank you for mentioning Ted Smith. He has really, in the midst of this, his work has been just extraordinary in bringing on, you know, many, many people from many different parts of the community. His outreach has been invaluable.
Yes, and of course, we could add to that Dr. Miriam Nyhan Gray, who presents her program on IrishRadio.com, Irish Radio Network, we're very indeed proud of. I can we tackle even a more sensitive topic in the sense that, you know, the Irish came to not only New York, but particularly, let's say, central New York. And they became very much a part of the political system here. Many started, as indeed our own Uncle Bill, former mayor of New York, Bill O'Dwyer, as a cop. And it would now appear that perhaps some of the hesitancy to get involved in the Black Lives Matter movement might indeed be attributed to the fact that the Black Lives Matter movement now seems to be primarily anti-cop, anti-law and order, and that there's a conflict there, and definitely, well, it's not an issue now because the barroom bellying up to the bar is not even in the cards for the moment. But can you understand, and how do we explain to those who maybe were on the fence to begin with and could take or leave, say, a civil rights Black Lives Matter movement, And then say, you know, by the way, take all the crap that's being thrown at law and order cops, and, you know, to hell with the tradition of, you know, some great leaders, cops in particular, you know, firemen, and this onslaught of defunding police, and how is that supposed to make those of us, you know, feel better about the support of the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, I think we have to, you know, figure out two things or say two things. One is, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, that doesn't mean that it's anti-cop. It means that it's anti the fact that black people are being hurt and, you know, and without by certain police people, and they are being hurt, and the police need more training, they need more funding. They don't need defunding, they need more funding to be able to the pressures on policemen these days are just incredible. And one of the things we're doing, you know, is we've asked them to do everything. You know, somebody comes in, they're family counselors, they have to come in at a family dispute. There's mental health counselors because somebody's mentally deformed. They're everything, and they're asked to do things that they shouldn't be asked to do. And they're asked with improper training and improper supervision. So I think there's, and yes, there are bad cops, there are bad politicians, there are bad lawyers, there are bad accountants, and they need to be taken care of. But that doesn't mean that all of them are. Most of them are, the vast majority are people that really want to help the communities they serve. And I think we need to, one, we need to acknowledge that always, and two, we need to make sure that by being in favor of the Black Lives Matter movement doesn't even come close to being not appreciating the work that the police departments do in those communities in particular.
Yeah. And I think that it's a double whammy in the sense that we rely on cops in particular, as you've mentioned, you know, to protect us, to add to the list of what they're expected to do, and indeed many go above and beyond. They have to go out regardless of the threat, the coronavirus. They have to go right into the middle of it, and deserve some respect for that as well. And we seem to be getting caught up in the either or. That needs to be toned down.
Absolutely needs to be toned down. These are, there are people on the street every single day. You know, not only the crime, you're right, the coronavirus, people dying of coronavirus because they're out there. When the rest of us have the luxury of quarantining ourselves, they don't.
Yeah. And they should, again, they should get equal respect to the first responders, because without... without those who are protecting us and those who are actually, putting themselves there as a barrier between the coronavirus and ourselves, it's laudable, and it's not a very popular topic to discuss, but I figured that having you on there, I could unload that on you and let you take the rap for wherever it goes.
Well done.
Brian, can we come back to the funeral service for Congressman John Lewis and the immense tribute and tributes that have been paid, a service that attracted former U.S. presidents, from George Bush to Bill Clinton, and of course Barack Obama. He had to have an immense impact on society to have three presidents. I mean, there are very few in political life that would have three former presidents, not only show up but speak so eloquently about John Lewis.
He did, and what I thought was, the person that I was most touched by was George Bush's. As a Republican, had been on the other side of many issues, and but on the right side of other issues. But, he explained it well. I thought, it was a tribute to both George Bush and John Lewis that George Bush was asked to and spoke so eloquently at his funeral, that they didn't allow some policy differences to get into the way of their relationship. I found, I know others talked about, and they were right, the beautiful eulogy of Barack Obama, but in my mind, the most most impressive thing there was George Bush.
Yeah. And now, can we get on to, maybe you're buried in the woods up there, but you are very involved in the campaign, the presidential campaign, and of course we're very happy that you have hooked yourself onto, you know, a Ballina man, being from Mahimas myself, much closer to Ballina than Bohola is. Just give us your opinion, and if it can be somewhat neutral for a change, that would be terrific. The Biden campaign up to now, first of all, it's doing extremely well. And, you know, we may have, President Biden visiting Mayo and Ballina and so forth. But, you know, there is the press in general, and we're not just talking about the Fox News, we know where they are, CNN, MSNBC, there has rarely been such a divide, anger, bitterness in any presidential election than we're facing right now. And yes, you have, Joe Biden, who's leading by a mile in the polls, and somehow our current president, Trump, is hogging the headlines all day, every day. Where does that leave your candidate?
Well, I think the answer, of course, is in terms of, and this is, of course, totally partisan. The answer is that there's an old saying that when your opponent is digging a grave, don't fight for him for the shovel. Mm. And, when the president comes out with some, really remarkably unintelligent things in terms of the coronavirus and the fact that we know that that is the reason that, we're in such a shape as we are now, and telling people to, drink Lysol, and promoting a woman who thinks, that aliens are coming down and don't wear masks and things of that sort. I think we're doing just fine, and we're doing just fine because the best example of us is, do you want Donald Trump to be president in January? And the answer, obviously, for most Americans right now is no. We are, but we are starting a campaign. I just wanted to know on Thursday there'll be an announcement coming out, and you'll be able to see it in Irish Voice and the Irish Echo and Irish Central very quickly, with a link. We are having on Thursday, we are having our first Irish American virtual rally, and we're having Valerie Biden, Vice President Biden's sister, is going to be the keynoter. We're having Mick Maloney is going to be performing, Joni Madden is going to be performing, and we're going to have an hour's worth of a more like a celebration than a political rally, but it's going to be a celebration, one, of the Irishness of Joe Biden, and a great kickoff for the campaign, and there'll be many more of them coming up, but this is our first foray into a political rally, and we're all doing these things differently with a virtual reality, and everybody will be sending out the link soon. Anybody who wants to can dial in or go in. on their computer and see a very, very nice 1 hour rally Thursday night at 5 o'clock.
I thought it was 7. No?
I'm sorry, 7 o'clock. That's
okay.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And let me see if I can embarrass both of us now and see if I can at least drag you down to my lack of knowledge as to how you do this. I'm sure that you haven't been practicing the new modern technology like the Zoom and the everything else there. So good luck to whoever is going to hook you up. But do you happen to know, the link? How do people?
Yeah, the best thing to do is, I know many of your listeners are on Irish Central. They will be publishing the link for everybody, and it's really good, very easy, because I can do it, which it shows you how easy it is.
Oh boy!
Once you go into the link, then you once you just all you have to do is tap on the link. That will give you an opportunity to register. And you write back and you give them your name and your email and all of that.
Yeah.
And then they email you back with the link for the thing, and then the next you can just tap onto that and you're right onto it. So that's
okay. I'll take your word for it. Anyway, if you get stuck, give one of your Sheridan a call, and don't tell her that I sent you. You know, just.
I've been actually, and I'm amazed at myself, Adrian, that I can actually do it. But it's really quite easy, and I promise you it is, because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to do it at all. So.
And it's Irish Americans for Biden. It's a virtual rally, and by the way, among the guests, you have a special guest in Mark Hamill.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry to forget that. Yeah, Mark Hamill is the keynoter. Luke Skywalker, for all of us who grew up with Star Wars or were with Star Wars, who has a real love for Ireland, having been over there for the filming of the last episode. So it's going to be quite the star-studded attraction for all of us.
Good. And it is an hour, so...
It's only an hour. It's 7 to 8, and that's it.
All right. Now, Brian, this is just between ourselves, and obviously we wouldn't want to discuss this in public. But, you know, you had your bags packed, when Hillary Clinton was, going to send you packing over to Ireland as U.S. ambassador. And then, I don't know who to blame here, but both of you went down the kitchen sink. You have one shot left, and it's in your best interest, to come up with and assure Joe Biden that even though you didn't make it the last time. Would you be up to that? Especially now that you know how to hook up, virtual social. That should help you tremendously.
Adrian, you know very well how to embarrass me in front of your entire listening audience. So.
But it's only between ourselves.
I'll give you the standard political answer. I'd be happy to serve Joe Biden in any way he could.
Okay. All right. Hedging your bets there. All right. Brian, again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Adrian. It was great to be here. But the other, talking about, packing your bags. This would have been the weekend that the O'Dwyer family all would have been together in Mayo.
Yeah.
And except for the coronavirus and the fact that we're being kept out of Ireland because of our horrible, horrible response to this thing. So particularly hit home to me this weekend.
And to all of us, particularly your sister Eileen Hughes, who is probably one of the, well, your brother, Dr. Bill, up in Albany, but probably the only two family members who could care less about either one of us. And whatever they're doing right now, you can be absolutely sure they're not listening to this program.
And we, you can be sure they are, and you can be sure that you're better. That, and don't forget my brother Rory, because he listens in as well, and he'll be very upset to you.
Rory, by the way, and we might as well just cover this now. When the O'Dwyer family came to Ireland, and your father Paul, and your mother Kathleen, and the family, Rory, as you mentioned, Rory actually came to Ireland and was educated in Bohola in the school where the O'Dwyer family were teachers, including our grandfather, who couldn't find a job in Cork and had to come up to Mayo, hat in hand, you know, to become a teacher. They were, and then Rory would go on to Blackrock College. But your brother, Dr. Bill, he actually wound up in Cork and became a doctor.
That's right, University College Cork.
Yeah, and of course the fairest of all, you know, Eileen, who became everybody's favorite cousin, and that's not taking anything away from you, because God knows that's the last thing I would do. You know, Brian, again, thank you.
Thank you, Adrian.
Catch up with you.
All the best. Thank you and yours.
Okay.
Bye-bye.